There is no shortage of photos of the devastation caused by the earthquake in China that's taken thousands of lives. International and state media are on the ground in Chengdu documenting the natural disaster and the government's response. But it's a very different story in Myanmar. Remember that other natural disaster that struck nearly 2 weeks ago, the cyclone that's left at least 60,000 people dead or missing and more than a million facing disease and hunger. The military junta in Myanmar has started to allow international aid to trickle in, but not aid workers or journalists for that matter. Dan Rivers is a correspondent with CNN who managed to get inside Myanmar, but when the government found out and started chasing him down, he had to escape. Dan is back in Bangkok, Thailand now, the staging ground for aid efforts for Myanmar, and he joins me now on the line. Dan, thanks for being here. I want to talk first about any effect that you have seen there on the ground in relation to the earthquake in China. They are some of the same international aid agencies that are there in Bangkok trying to get into Myanmar. Now that the China quake has happened, have you seen any pullout?
We haven't seen, as far as I'm aware, any staff being diverted up to China, but I guess on a sort of macro level, it will only make things more complicated for these NGOs and aid agencies. They're already stretched and working around the clock, and now having this other huge natural disaster in China is not going to make things any easier for sure.
You say that the UN has managed to get inside Myanmar to set up an operation base there. The first U.S. plane full of aid went into Myanmar this week. But is it getting to where it needs to go? Are you able to get information from Myanmar about the impact that aid is making?
Well, it's very difficult to get a real, true picture of what's happening because of the constraints that we've been under reporting inside the country. What I can tell you is that there are certainly concerns from the U.S. and the U.N. That the food that they're delivering is not getting out fast enough from Yangon Airport to the Irrawaddy Delta. We haven't really got a clear picture of exactly where the aid is getting and how much, just because the military regime is being incredibly secretive. It's not exactly being forthcoming with information, and it's not exactly being forthcoming with visas for journalists to go in and report the story.
As you say, it's incredibly difficult to report this story, to figure out just what's happening on the ground. NPR, we also have a reporter there who has not yet been identified. We're keeping that person's identity anonymous. You yourself were in Myanmar reporting anonymously for a while, but you made a decision to go on camera. Explain what was behind that decision.
Well, we were in there for about the first 24 hours reporting on the situation anonymously, as you say. And we took the decision that my reports would have much more impact if I could appear on camera and look down the barrel of the lens and tell people how bad the situation was. That has a lot more impact, in my view, on television. If you have someone physically on your screen looking at you, telling you, look, this is how bad it is, showing you, leading you through as a viewer, taking you by the hand and leading you through the story. The problem with just voicing over picture, it tends to wash over people.
But you knew you were taking a gamble because theoretically people would find out and your access would be shut off. So it's making that calculus. Do we do fewer reports?
Yeah, I mean, it's a very fine judgment. And we think in hindsight it was the right thing to do. It certainly, our report certainly created a very big impact. And I think, you know, I hope that they generated a fair amount of publicity. They grabbed the attention of world leaders who suddenly realized, you know, this isn't just another disaster. This is a massive catastrophe happening right before our eyes, and something needs to be done about it.
I know it was a long, drawn-out saga with many twists and turns, most likely, but can you give us just the short version of how you got out of the country? You literally had to escape.
Yeah, well, as soon as I went on air, obviously I was a sort of marked man, and they distributed my photo around trying to find us. We were questioned in one town. The rest of my crew were questioned. I was sort of remain hidden. Then eventually we were caught by the police. Luckily, I managed to show my passport without showing my name. I kind of held my thumb over my surname. and they didn't twig who I was. Finally, we were kind of escorted out of the area. We managed to talk our way out, got back to the main city, Yangon, and we decided it was time for me to leave. I got out, got onto the plane, managed to get through passport control right the way to sitting on the plane, thinking I was home free, and then the immigration officials and the secret police came and took me off and questioned me and searched our bags. Luckily, I had nothing incriminating on me, no films or no cameras or anything, so they basically stamped, deported in my passport, and that was it. I was out.
Now you are back in Bangkok, which is the staging ground for the aid efforts for Myanmar. I want to ask you about a larger international pressure. France has suggested just going in and delivering aid without permission from the military leaders in Myanmar and is pushing a UN resolution to make that happen. Have you heard any rumblings on the ground there that this idea might be gaining traction, or are people or aid workers saying, gosh, if the UN would only step in, that it would make things a lot easier for us?
Yeah, I mean, this is an idea that's being sort of kicked around by Bernard Kouchner, and I mean, I honestly can't see this getting much traction. I mean, what they would basically be proposing was sort of almost kind of invading Burma and delivering aid without the permission of the army. But I mean, ideally, what needs to happen really is for the regime to be persuaded that these aid workers need to come in, that they're not there to do anything other than help the people. And I think, China is pretty critical in all this. Now, unfortunately, China is now suddenly preoccupied with its own natural disaster, with this earthquake. But China does have a massive amount of influence in Myanmar to get them to open up a bit more. I mean, that seems a more realistic possibility. I just can't see this idea of unilaterally the French Navy sailing in and sort of landing in the Irrawaddy Delta themselves. I can't see them going through with it.
Finally, Dan, there are reports out that another storm is headed that direction. How is that affecting people's psyche, really, as they're struggling to even get in to deal with this first one?
Yeah, well, there's this low pressure system sitting out in the Bay of Bengal, which is sort of nudging up exactly to the same area, which is going to dump, I think it was 200 millimeters of rain, a huge amount of rain. You know, these people thought the worst was over, and suddenly to see those skies darkening again, and for that rain to come back again and the winds to pick up again, it is going to terrify them, I'd imagine.
CNN's Dan Rivers, who joins us on the line from Bangkok, Thailand. Dan, thanks very much for sharing your reporting. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
Take care.
Coming up on the program, it's all art all the time here at the BPP. I speak not of just the normally high level of artistry we bring to our craft, but art reporter Lindsay Pollack, just talking about some major art auctions going on this week. Last night, a Rothko sold for $50 million. What's all the hubbub over? Stay tuned and find out. This is the Bryant Park Project from NPR News.